We are going around the state talking musicals here in Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kahn. Thanks for being here. And our communities are singing. There's a staging of a Charlie Brown Christmas in Elkhorn and the Dells, a Tuna Christmas in Sturgeon Bay. Hello, Third Avenue Playhouse, and Elf the Musical all over the place. La Crosse, Waukesha, Milwaukee, Hudson has Junior. Are you planning to get out for a musical this weekend? What will you see? What are your favorite musicals this year? And what did you love about the musical you saw? We're at 800-642-1234 joining in. Gwendolyn Rice is a writer and playwright in Madison. She's a theater critic for The Isthmus, an alt weekly newspaper in Madison, and on Milwaukee.com. Gwen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much.
Oh, well, we just got a little oomph there from Elf the Musical.
Yes.
And this is staging across Wisconsin this holiday season. And let's hear a little bit more.
All you have to do is move your voice up higher. High, low, high, low.
I just like talking, only you sustain it and you make it sound pretty.
No.
I feel like this should be our exercise this morning. Hi-lo.
Right. I actually had the chance to see Elf at First Stage in Milwaukee, which is one of the top children's theaters in the country. And so they did a slightly revised version that was really meant for family audiences. And it was spectacular. And it runs through the end of the year. They've actually added performances because the demand has been so great. The young performers are gorgeous. The man who plays Buddy the Elf is just
endearing.
Out of this world. Yeah. And all of your favorite scenes are there. You know, you see him put the maple syrup on his spaghetti in the morning. You know, it's just delightful. So that was definitely one of the highlights for my holiday viewing so far.
Do you feel like this is really a kid-friendly type musical, maybe a good gateway musical?
Well, it's interesting. The first time that they turned it into a musical, the writers really tried to play to both parents and kids and wrote in a few sort of wink, wink, maybe not kid totally appropriate jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've realized, you know what, we need to focus on the family experience.
Uh-huh.
And so the version at First Stage really does that. You know, the fact that there are so many kids in the production, they play all the elves, you know, and they actually have a really big part. It's a little long for tiny kids because it's a full-length musical. It's over 2 hours. But particularly if they're already familiar with the movie, yes, I think it's a fantastic way to show them a new way to enjoy one of their favorite stories.
Well, a lot of musicals are based on movies.
They are. I mean, this is definitely a trend on Broadway. It feels easier to take a known quantity, a story that people are already familiar with, and then you know, put it in this new format. Although I have to say, the last few years that has not worked out so well. I mean, the Pretty Woman musical flopped terribly. You're seeing. A lot of the, oh, well, this was a movie. Why don't we turn it into a musical? You know, even
right.
Tootsie, you know, Beetlejuice, these were all just
doesn't always translate.
And frankly, it's refreshing to see that audiences are actually looking for something different. They actually want a new story. And so there are some really exciting new, brand new musicals that are being written that people are saying, oh, you know, I'm going to give that a chance. I don't have to know the story ahead of time.
We are talking about musical theater on Wisconsin Weekend with Gwen Rice, a theater critic who writes for The Isthmus and on Milwaukee.com. You can join in. Do you have tickets for a musical this weekend? Are you performing in one? Do you love to sing or dance? What musicals do you think people should know about? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Gwen, last week on Wisconsin Weekend, we talked about Nutcracker all over the place.
Oh, sure.
What other holiday themed shows might be an option for audiences around the state if they love musicals?
Well, certainly A Christmas Carol is going to be probably in every community.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, you know, there's a fantastic version both at the Madison Children's Theater mm-hmm. and also at the Milwaukee Rep. And they do them every year, you know, and they're full of Christmas carols, that sort of thing. If that's one of your family traditions, you know, absolutely bring the kids out to that. I mean, it's the iconic Christmas story. So,
sure.
So that's a great one.
You found something in the Dells.
I did. I have not actually been
quirky
there.
Quirky and wonderful. Please divulge.
But there's a theater called the Palace Theater in the Dells. They do mostly dinner theater. Mm-hmm. And they have put together a show called Holly Jolly 2, A Story Told by Mrs. Claus.
Okay.
And it is sort of a musical review. You know, there's lots of carols in it, but it is also a comedy, and it's told from Mrs. Claus's perspective. So it's just a new way to enjoy some of your favorite, you know, sort of holiday songs and tropes and that sort of thing.
And runs through the 29th, so still time.
Right, absolutely. You can do a post-Christmas, you know, just expand the season a little bit. We start celebrating in October, we might as well go right up to January.
Exactly. Well, let's turn to non-holiday shows. This weekend and through the end of the month, the Skylight Music Theater in Milwaukee has 10 shows of Newsies. So what do fans love about Newsies? It's another musical, though, based on a movie.
Yeah, it's interesting. The movie did not do well when it first came out. And then Disney sort of repurposed it again into a different medium. And it has an absolute cult following, especially with kids who grew up watching these incredible numbers that focus on kids. So it's mm-hmm. it's actually based on a true story about a newsboys strike in New York at the turn of the century. And it's really one of those, the underdog fights the fat cats and organizes and wins. And each one of the newsboys, and actually in this production, there are a lot of newsgirls as well, which
okay.
is nice.
Yeah.
They are enchanting. I mean, most of the performers are teenagers or young 20s, so they've got all this sort of youthful enthusiasm and righteousness, and the leads are absolutely fantastic. The dancing is really one of the biggest draws because the story is small-ish. I mean, mm-hmm. it's set up pretty good guys, bad guys. You know how this is going to turn out. But there are a lot of really ambitious dance breaks, and Skylight does it really well.
So lots to really watch and see and kind of take in.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very fun, sort of heartwarming show that doesn't have anything specifically to do with the holidays.
Well, let's go to Wendy now in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. Newsies actually is one of the first musicals that I took my daughter to see at the Fireside here in Fort Atkinson, which is a big musical theater all year round. But I was telling your screener, she has introduced me to many, many new musicals. She recently got her driver's license, so now Mom won't be going because she won't have to drive. But we saw Anastasia at the Overture Center, which was phenomenal and is one of my daughter Melody's favorite musicals. We also went to Milwaukee to see The Book of Mormon, which totally different wavelength from Anastasia, but still just funny as all get out. Now she wants to go to Chicago. She's not ready to try driving there yet, but she wants me to take her to see Be More Chill, which
okay.
is coming to Chicago.
So,
and she has just introduced me. You talked about Beetlejuice. We have the soundtrack at home. We have the soundtrack from Carrie, the musical, which is based on the Stephen King novel.
Wendy, and
could be put into a musical. Yeah.
It sounds like you two are all in. Thank you so much for sharing these suggestions, and definitely road trip it. We're talking with theater critic Gwen Rice, and she stays with us as we talk musical theater around Wisconsin. You can join in 800-642-1234. It's Music from the Office, a musical parody. We'll be back with Gwen Rice in just a moment here on the Ideas Network.
We spend all day in our chairs, pretending to work and play in solitaire.
Two bathrooms and one kitchen. I got a desk drawer to hide all my kitten.
Oh, E-O.
We're exploring musicals coming to Wisconsin on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The songs, the dancing, the costumes of The Lion King hit Milwaukee in February, months after the story of Simba gained new attention with Disney's release of a live-action film. So let's listen to more of the Broadway production song, He Lives in You. Are you planning to see Lion King or another musical next year? Which musicals did you see this year? What would you recommend? Join in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us, WPR Mornings. Theater critic Gwen Rice stays with us. So, Gwen, back to Wendy in Fort Atkinson. She had a lot of recommendations there. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned that Book of Mormon is going to be coming up back around in 2020?
Yes, okay. It is still touring.
Still touring.
It has made the rounds, and it's actually been to Madison and Milwaukee, I think, a couple of times. As she said, you know, it is one of the funniest, you know, 2 hours that you'll probably spend in a theater. I think it's getting a little dated right now. Some of the references they were super topical at the time when it came out, but that was, you know, now quite a few years ago. But particularly if you enjoy South Park, if you enjoy just really a writer who does not think any topic is off limits. There's nothing too far. There's nothing too ridiculous. The nice thing about it, too, is that it is actually a really beautifully built musical. The songs are fantastic. The performances are amazing. So it's not just some silly, wild sort of, oh my God, I can't believe he said that kind of humor. It's also a kind of a classical musical that's got a lot of it's got a lot of great songs.
Well, I was just thinking about the bond that Wendy and her daughter have in sharing going to musicals. Do you like to experience musicals in kind of solitude, or do you like to go with a crowd, or how do you experience them?
It really depends on kind of what I'm excited about at the time. You know, I always look forward to the Tony Awards so mm-hmm. that I can see snippets of the hot things in New York. I've been trying to get to New York about once every year or two just in the last couple of years. But before that, you know, we're here in a different market. Mm-hmm. And so typically we have to wait a little while. I mean, as I think everybody in the state knows, Hamilton was just here and sort of took over every performing arts center for mm-hmm. Some long runs. And it's fantastic. But, you know, it takes a while for things to sort of filter down here. So I do like to see sort of what's hot and new. And I remember actually seeing some of the songs from Fun Home being performed just on the Tonys and the lead up to the Tonys. And I immediately bought the CD and memorized the entire show and then finally got to see it and then, you know, see how it all fit together. So there are some stories that I think just really grab you
and speak to you.
And you sort of learn the music first. And then there are others. I actually saw Dear Evan Hansen right after it opened on Broadway. I just happened to be in New York.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about it. The cast album wasn't out yet. Ben Platt wasn't a superstar yet. and so I really went in not knowing what to expect and was blown away. And so that actually just it's touring the state now.
Yeah.
And I just saw it in Milwaukee at the Marcus Center, and the tour is fantastic.
We have a little bit of music from that. I wonder if we can pull that up. Let's listen.
Looking back at me. We start with stars in our eyes. That we belong, but every sun doesn't rise, and no one tells you where you went wrong. Step out of the sun if you keep getting burned.
And Dear Evan Hansen arrives in Appleton next summer, so it's coming.
It's starting to make the rounds, and it's fantastic.
Well, let's take a call now. Brandon is joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Brandon.
Hi. I would just, you know, I'm a guy, I like to go and see some of the theater plays, and I've seen some of the larger, you know, large-scale productions. But I'd like to mention that in Green Bay, at the university, UW Green Bay, their theater program puts on a lot of plays. And if somebody wants to get into going out to a theater, but they don't want to spend the big money on the big productions. There's a lot of great local plays that they put on, and it's a great night out at the theater. You get to support your community, and it's not too expensive. So I think it's a good way for people to go out and see a play.
Oh, Brandon, thank you so much for that. That, you know, that's great to be able to just support your local community.
Absolutely. And it's a great point. You know, all of the colleges in Wisconsin, you know, normally do a musical or two straight plays, and they do some amazing stuff. I've seen just like crazy cool shows here at UW-Madison. When I was growing up, I would go over to UW-Whitewater a lot mm-hmm. and just see. And you never know. I actually, when I first started reviewing here in Madison, there was an actress who was in the MFA program at Madison named Carrie Kuhn. And I saw her in a lot of plays, and I kept thinking, she's really good. And now, of course, she's gone on to crazy success with The Leftovers and all of her other projects. So you never know.
You never know.
Rising star.
Well, we have time for more music. We've been talking about movies earlier. Another one, Legally Blonde, is coming to Milwaukee and Green Bay in March. So here's the song, Oh My God, You Guys. Oh my God.
Oh my God, you guys. I actually enjoy Legally Blonde, the musical, more than the movie because I feel like the story lends itself really well to the stage. I mean, it's so silly and melodramatic at times. And I mean, the sort of incredible emotion, mm-hmm. it really lends itself really well to being sung
yeah.
in songs like that. So that's a lot of fun. So, great dance numbers, too.
Yeah, so check it out, you know, midwinter in March when you really need a little
right.
fun pick-me-up, right?
Exactly.
Well, let's quick touch down on Nonsense. Also, the Milwaukee Rep has performances this weekend through mid-January of Nonsense.
Some folks think of convents as the places where we pray, but let us tell you, convents are much more than that today. We're dedicated people, but we like to have our fun.
We're here tonight to share with you the humor of the nun.
You have some feelings here and some roots in Nonsense.
I do, actually. I remember seeing Nonsense for the first time at the old Madison Rep. With Colleen Burns, and that was one of my sort of formative theater experiences. And I remember thinking at the time, my God, I could never be in this. There's tap dancing, there's singing, they're all in habits. I mean, it's a crazy show. It's very funny. And then actually when I was in my 20s, I was in a production of Nonsense, and my tap dance classes finally paid off. You know, it's a chestnut. It's been around for a really long time. I was actually really surprised when they programmed it just because it is one of those like old favorites. I mean, every mm-hmm. community theater has already done it. But there's something great about taking a really silly show like that and putting the best talent that you can find into it.
Uh-huh.
And it does elevate the whole experience. And anybody who has gone to Catholic school, who has known a nun, there's lots of, you know, Catholic jokes. There's lots of, it's very silly, but it's also like, if you just want to go out and have a really fun time with your family for, you know, a couple hours over the holidays, it's a great way to go.
Well, Gwen Rice, theater critic writing for the Isthmus, we had music from The Lion King earlier. We didn't talk about The Lion King.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are really big musicals, big productions. What do you think of those?
You know, I love the fact that Broadway more and more is getting much more varied in their kinds of productions that they're producing. And they're really giving audiences credit for being able to use their imagination. So that there are shows like Peter and the Starcatcher, which is done with almost no set. And it's a really incredible ensemble piece. And it tells a beautiful story really through the actors' bodies. And it's just it's astounding. I mean, I like a good old-fashioned huge cast, 100 costumes, crazy sets, chandeliers falling from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up, you know, seeing the musicals of the 80s, which were all just bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
I remember seeing The Lion King in London, actually, quite a while ago now. And, I mean, the cool thing about that, of course, is that Julie Taymor took this Disney property, which had been done, you know, all of their Disney shows had been sort of on the Disney on Ice kind of version, mm-hmm, where mm-hmm. it was just kind of a big character replication of the movie, but a sure. little cheesier. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this was really an illustration that... there was real artistry that could be infused into yeah. the story. And I have taken my elder son to go see it. And there is just nothing like watching a child's face as these enormous puppets, you know, walk down the aisle up to the stage right next to them. And it's, I mean, the puppetry is gorgeous. Obviously, the music is gorgeous. It's a really... wonderful experience.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Glenn Rice, writer and playwright in Madison, a theater critic for the Isthmus and on Milwaukee.com. We'll go out here on Dear Evan Hansen back after this news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're dropping in now on the Wausau Story Revisited. It's an exhibit at the Wausau Museum of Contemporary Art. Runs through March. So story goes, Employers Mutuals of Wisconsin was insuring the nation's largest companies, expanding like crazy in the 40s. Trying to craft their brand, a New York ad firm comes up with the Wausau Story. And then in 1968, there was this news magazine, you might have heard of it, called 60 Minutes. Wausau Insurance was one of the first loyal advertisers. Here's one ad. Picture a spelling bee.
W-A-U-S-A-U. There's a USA in the middle, a W-A up front,
that's
and another
fine,
U in back. That's Wausau.
Thank
you. As in Wausau Insurance Companies.
That's fine.
The business insurance experts.
Thank you.
So much history to dive into. Your questions, your remembrances. Do you remember the famous Wausau Insurance ad campaigns? What one was your favorite? Join in 800-642-1234. Ben Clark is the archivist for the Marathon County Historical Society, which collaborated with the Wausau Museum of Contemporary Art on the Wausau Story Revisited. He joins us from our studios in Wausau. Ben, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you.
So we're going to get to this famous TV campaign, but first let's look at how the story starts in the early 1900s, 1911. What was happening with Wausau Insurance?
Well, back then it wasn't Wausau Insurance. I guess the place to start would be that there was sort of a landmark state law that was passed in 1911. That established workers' compensation insurance as a thing. And so a bunch of people in Wausau, businessmen, decided that maybe it'd be a good idea to have a company that would underwrite those claims if they needed to. So they created what was then called the Employers Mutual Limited Liability Company of Wisconsin. And for maybe obvious reasons, they decided to shorten that to Employers Mutual most often. But mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's kind of where the company emerged from back in 1911.
So they are in the throes of growing and growing. They're doing big business, but they're in this small Midwest town, and they have to kind of craft their image. So what did they do?
Yeah, in the early years was tough because workers' compensation was a new thing. They didn't really know if companies were going to go for it. But after they kind of got over that hump and became kind of a successful company that existed, and they by the time they got to the 40s, they realized that maybe they needed an image, something to kind of set them apart from a lot of other companies. So they decided to go get some outside help. They brought in some ad people from Chicago to kind of take a look at their company and see what. You know, what they could do about it.
And what did they decide to do about it?
Well, what kind of struck the Chicago people as they came in, they were sort of used to doing sort of big city environment and that sort of thing, and dealing with companies that were in that sort of, mode of working with people. But they came up here, and Wausau is this small little town in central Wisconsin. Even though this company is doing millions and millions of dollars in business every year, we still sort of had this small town attitude. And they kind of want to play that up by, you know, they one of the things that they did is they interviewed some of the clients for Employers Mutual. And the kind of pull quote that they ended up using was, you know, they're good people to do business with. They're like any little small town. They care about their neighbors and they're willing to go the extra mile to, you know, make things right. So that kind of became the sort of cusp of what they ended up kind of moving forward on.
And a depot becomes really the central image. Mm-hmm. We see this Wausau Depot at night with stars in the sky, and you have the word Wausau emblazoned on the roof. Mm-hmm. Where did that image come from?
Yeah, well, that was designed by a Chicago artist named Everett McNear. It's kind of interesting because the image itself doesn't really exist. Like you couldn't go to spots, even back in 1953 when they were sort of putting this together, you couldn't stand there and see that image as it's depicted. The depot itself is actually, we had two depots in Wausau at that time. And so they kind of took the architecture of one and they kind of moved it to the location of the other one, and kind of the skyline in the background, it doesn't quite fit what it actually was. They kind of moved it around, but the end result is a really kind of iconic image that sums up Wausau pretty well.
So they were blending images to create this kind of logo design.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's all sort of drawn out, so they could kind of get away with that a little easier.
We're talking about the Wausau Story Revisited exhibit at the Wausau Museum of Contemporary Art. Ben Clark is archivist for the Marathon County Historical Society. And we're going to bring in Rob Menser. He's WPR's rural communities reporter based in Wausau. You can join in as well, 800-642-1234. Did you work for Wausau Insurance when these ads were ramping up? How did you see that shape the company? Have you been to the exhibit at the Wausau Museum of Contemporary Art? What piece pulled you in? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Rob Menser, I understand you did a walkthrough yesterday afternoon of the exhibit.
Yeah, I took a look.
How was it?
It's interesting. It's fun, right? So the in the same way that the original image is sort of an interpretation, these paintings, these 14 paintings in the exhibit are the same, right? They're not they play on the idea of a small town and a sort of cozy place, and I don't know, you're meeting your kid at the train depot or whatever. In a way there's a sort of Norman Rockwell quality to many of them, but they're also playing with lines, and it's good, it's interesting. And then the exhibit also includes like some video clips from, you know, I don't know, Regis Philbin talking about the Wausau commercials on the Regis and Kathy Lee show, or Wausau as a clue on Jeopardy one time, and so it's fun.
So, Ben, when did we start to see TV ads for Wausau Insurance making their debut? What kind of impact did they have?
I don't know if they actually had TV ads before sort of the breakout thing. The breakout moment was the creation of 60 Minutes. Mm-hmm. In the late 60s, the first depot ad that we were talking about ran in the Saturday Evening Post. That was sort of the one that's the journal that they would send things to, the publication. But that kind of went under at that point, and they were looking for a new opportunity to, you know, a new place to advertise. And they were looking at creating this new 60 Minutes program. And so Wausau Insurance became, well, back then Employers Mutual, became sort of a cornerstone advertiser there. And so as it became a very popular program, people would see these ads, at the ad breaks.
So those commercials became very popular in the 70s and the 80s. Yeah. And when you think about the appeal that they were making, like at that time, that was a time of like urban decay and very high crime rates in like large cities. It was a rough time for large cities in America. And so this idea of making an appeal that is entirely based on like a small town where you know your neighbors and you look out for each other, that, you know, look, it's a romanticized kind of a message, but at the same time you could see how that was an appealing message to a broad audience across different parts of the country at that time.
And Rob, you're your dad is in insurance, and he knew about these ads and mentioned them to you when you moved to Wausau. Does that really show the power of advertising?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Central Illinois, and to my knowledge, I don't know that I ever saw one of these commercials myself. But my parents definitely knew about them, and more than one person, when I said where I was moving to start a job at a newspaper, whatever, 15 years ago, said, "Oh, I know their commercials from 60 Minutes for sure." That they absolutely made a mark in that way.
And Ben, on 60 Minutes, they really owned Sunday nights in the insurance market. I mean, they were committed to this advertising.
Yeah, definitely. I guess I don't know add much more to that, but it definitely was a big part of what they their ad campaigns for sure.
How did you see it, Ben, shape Wausau in what we see today? Do they linger? Does that aura linger on Wausau, if you will?
I think it definitely has left an impact. I think you can kind of go back to the turn of the century. You know, we're a lumber town, like a lot of places in Wisconsin, and it's Wausau Insurance is one of the sort of prongs of the industry that moves out. You know, where as the lumber gets used up, and we need to find a new, you know, outlet and new economy to sustain the community that stat was established here. You know, it's, you know, paper companies and, you know, a couple of their manufacturing and insurance. And so that sort of legacy has really shaped as generations of people have moved here to work in insurance. And, you know, it's a big part of who we are here.
Robin, I understand that you caught some of these commercials playing at the museum. When you were watching them, how did they make you feel?
Well, Kate, they're a little corny.
Yeah. For sure.
I mean, it was a different time. You know what I mean? The like advertising sensibility of the late 1970s is a little different, maybe. But at the same time, they're cute, and I mean, they are fun. I think that the image that they portray, one of the reasons why it sticks here is it also flatters Wausau's self-image, right? You know, if you live in this community, you want to think of this community as a place where people are good to work with and they look out for their neighbors and so on and so forth. I'm not here to argue with that. This is a good community, but at the same time, it's like the same advertising message that sort of worked on America also like works on the self-image of Wausau itself.
We are talking about the Wausau story. It's at the museum, Wausau Museum of Contemporary Art. Talking with Ben Clark, archivist for the Marathon County Historical Society, which collaborated with the museum on the Wausau story revisited. Rob Mentzer here as well. He's WPR's rural communities reporter. He's based in Wausau. So do you remember the famous Wausau Insurance ad campaigns? Did you grow up in Wausau? What kind of impact did you see these campaigns having on the area, the community? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment for more conversation. It's Wisconsin Weekend here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about the Wausau Story Revisited exhibit that's up at the Wausau Museum of Contemporary Art right now. So the iconic image of this ad campaign is a train depot, and so here's the visual. It's Wausau at night, stars in the sky, a few people on the platform, and across the roof of this depot is a big, bold letters, Wausau. The very first print ad for the Wausau story appeared in the Saturday Evening Post in 1954. What are your remembrances of this ad campaign? Did you watch 60 Minutes and recall seeing ads in the late 60s, 70s, 80s? Did they put Wausau on the map? Join in at 800-642-1234. Ben Clark is the archivist for the Marathon County Historical Society. He stays with us. And WPR reporter Rob Mentzer checked out the exhibit yesterday, and he stays with us as well. So, Ben, do you think younger people, kids, would get a kick out of this exhibit? Or is this really for the older generation who remember this ad campaign?
Well, it's definitely for the older people, for sure. When we had the opening for the exhibit, they sent out invites to all of the former employees, the retired people from Wass Insurance, and there was a huge response. So there's definitely that. As far as sort of younger generation, I think it's definitely interesting. It's kind of hard, like what Rob was saying about the ads. They're kind of dated. For sure. I mean, even the concept of a depot is kind of, I would imagine, pretty alien to most younger people, because you know we don't really travel by train up here anymore. So it definitely is a unique look at sort of this era of our past.
Ben, what's become of the two depots that this famous ad was kind of merging and showcasing?
Yeah, they've kind of had a storied past, I guess. The Wass Insurance did buy one of the depots at one point, and we're looking at maybe restoring it and other things at various points. I think the Boy Scouts were in there for quite a while, as well as some law offices and other things. I think recently they've been sort of moved more towards like restauranting. I think a distillery was put in there. I think they opened up last year or this year. Mm. So it definitely has had sort of a greater life beyond just being a depot after the railroads left.
And Rob, you observed a connection between the place that's currently holding the exhibit, the Wausau Museum of Contemporary Art, and the exhibit itself. What was that significance?
Yeah, I think it's kind of, so the depot, I used to work sort of next door to one of these depots, and it was not exactly vacant, but it was like used as like warehouse space or something. It was not really used in a sort of for a public any way that the public would have any connection to. Mm-hmm. And then it was just in 2017 that this Timekeeper Distillery opened, and now it's like nicely refurbished. You can go in there; it's lovely, sort of wood, and they make whatever vodka and gin and stuff, and people enjoy that. So it's like this whole new sort of refurbished space that, in a way, if the old depot was like aspirational, became an aspirational symbol of kind of like cozy small towniness. I think that in a way, having it be a sort of a hip young distillery is sort of aspirational of what maybe Wausau wants to be or think of itself as now. Now, the Wausau Museum of Contemporary Art is kind of the same. It follows a similar pattern in a way. It used to be a place called the Wausau Club, and it was like this social club for rich people, this, you know, sort of a country club kind of a thing. And it's really this – it's quite a grand building. Mm. Pillars in the front, and that was also vacant for maybe almost two decades before this proposal was accepted to make it the Wausau Museum of Contemporary Art, and now it's this lovely little art space, and that's where. So in the same way that the depot is rejuvenated, this old building is rejuvenated to now hold this exhibit.
Well, Ben, what will happen to these works when this exhibit comes down?
It's a good question. They were donated somewhere in 2018. It's been a sort of a long process, and we were looking to find a home for them. But actually, the collection that was donated to the Historical Society actually consists of quite a bit more. We kind of winnowed it down to some of the better pieces and removed some of the duplicates. So the rest of them are actually already at storage at the museum, or our museum, the Historical mm-hmm. Society. And so when it does come down, we're not entirely sure. We might look at some other options, but in likelihood, they'll probably go back into storage for a while, and then maybe we'll pull them out from time to time to show them to the public too.
Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Ben Clark is archivist for the Marathon County Historical Society. Rob Mentzer is WPR's Rural Communities reporter in Wausau, and they joined us from our studios there in Wausau. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Steve Gotcher with a question about the holiday cocktail known as the Tom and Jerry.
Every season has its cocktails. In the summer, it's gin and tonic with a twist of lime, a margarita, or a Long Island iced tea. When the temperature drops and the snow piles up, people want a little more warmth, like a hot buttered rum or spiced mulled wine. During the holiday season, folks in Wisconsin turn to a hot drink known as the Tom and Jerry to warm them up. That got listener Pam Stokowski of Whitewater wondering,
is Tom and Jerry's a Wisconsin thing?
We were intrigued and decided this topic needed some serious research. So we asked someone who has spent some time studying the cocktail.
Down on the corner, the crowd is so merry. I wind up by having about 12 Tom and Jerry.
Well, maybe someone who has a slightly more scholarly approach.
My name is Jim Drager. I wrote a book for the Wisconsin Historical Society called Bottoms Up, A Toast to Wisconsin's Historic Bars and Breweries.
We thought Drager might know if the Tom and Jerry is unique to Wisconsin and why that's so.
I think there are a couple of reasons why it's a Wisconsin thing. First of all, it's basically a farm-based drink because it has dairy and eggs in it and butter in it. So, you know, for us Wisconsinites, that hits home to that sweet spot in our heart for dairy. And I think the other reason is because it's a drink that has brandy in it. And as we all know, Wisconsin has a thing for brandy.
So we have a dairy connection and the Sconny favorite, brandy. But did the Tom and Jerry originate here, or does it come from somewhere else?
There is an American mixologist named Jerry Thomas who claimed credit for it in the 1860s. He published a recipe for it in the first cocktail book written in the United States, but historians have demonstrated that it was around before Jerry got his hands on it. There's actually a known origin for it. In the 1820s, a London playwright created the drink to popularize a play that he had written that had two characters named Tom and Jerry in them. And it just took off from that point and became popular.
The play was called Tom and Jerry, or Life in London, by William Moncrief. It was quite popular at the time, running for over 2 years in London before coming to America. The Domino Bar in Wausau specializes in making Tom and Jerry's, serving over 4,000 of the hot concoction between Thanksgiving and New Year. Bar owner Dan Bauer is not sure if the Tom and Jerry is a Wisconsin thing or not, but he does say,
I know they're very popular around here, especially when it gets cold. The colder it gets, the better it gets. Warms you up inside.
Bauer says the tradition of making Tom and Jerry's over the holidays started at the Domino sometime in the 80s and gets bigger every year. Bartender Donna Seidler put one together Domino style.
We have the bowl of the Tom and Jerry mix. We do a swoop and spoon of the top secret batter. And then we add a shot of dark rum and brandy. And we have to make sure the water is rapidly boiling. And as we pour that in the cup, give it a couple of stirs. It's nice and frothy on top. Top it off with some of the sprinkles. And that is a Tom and Jerry.
Lovely. If you can't make it to the Domino during the holiday season, you can make Tom and Jerry's at home. Just don't forget to get a tub of batter from the market.
No, I didn't forget. The tree is up and the Tom and Jerry mix is in the refrigerator.
So gather around the fireplace with your family and friends, light the tree, and enjoy the season.
What'll you have, lad?
Whatever you're having, sir.
I'm having Tom and Jerry myself.
Special thanks to Rob Mentzer for his help with this piece. This story came from an audience question as part of the Wisconsin Project. Submit your question, and we might answer it in a future Wisconsin Life segment. Go to wpr.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin, in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Steve Gotcher.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's Wisconsin Weekend on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.